I'm Dr. Emily Silverman, and welcome to Talking Dementia with Remo Health. Join us as we explore the latest advances, insights, and strategies that help empower those living with dementia and the families that support them. Each episode, we sit down with leading experts, from physicians and researchers to policymakers and clinicians, to provide you with the resources needed to navigate this complex disease. Today, we're speaking with Chris Perry. Chris is a 30-year law enforcement veteran and the son of a retired Cincinnati police officer. He retired from the Cincinnati Police Department in 2024. Currently, he's a senior citizen resource officer with the Amberlee Village Police Department. He's an advocate for all things related to mental health, PTSD, as well as dementia awareness and training for first responders. He lost his mother to dementia in 2018. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a great opportunity. Appreciate it.
So Chris, I was reading about you before this conversation and learning about your background and where you're coming from. And it sounds like you come from a law enforcement family. So I'm wondering if you could tell us about that and about how you followed in your father's footsteps.
So from the earliest days that I can remember, I'd put that around probably like 1975, 76. My dad was a canine officer during that time period. I remember a police car being in the driveway. There was always a police dog in the house. And I pretty much thought that's how everybody grew up. I didn't understand when you had people that were afraid of the dog or anything. That police dog became my best friend. He's a member of the family, you know, and to this day we miss him. And it was just like having two police officers in the house. The dog was as much a police officer as my dad. Both of them were my heroes. My dad is still my hero.
Tell us about your decision to become an officer yourself.
I guess the number one thing with that was I never saw my dad hesitate to go to work. He never acted like he was too tired or frustrated or anything, but he enjoyed going to work. And when he came home, he was more often than not always in a good mood, other than being tired from the schedules that we keep. But he never had anything bad to say about it. And when I was around other people, they would be frustrated with their work or they didn't like their boss or some kind of issue they would complain about. I never heard that from my dad. And some of the stories he told me and the people that I had met through him, that seemed like the job for me. It was an opportunity to join my superheroes. And that's what I call them to this day, because any police officer, firefighter, to me, is a hero, just because I know what sacrifices are made. And unfortunately, I know all too well the negative effects of what trauma exposure can bring and what it can do to a family. I would never trade any part of my career for anything else. There were 22 years that were very rough, living with PTSD. I don't even say living sometimes, I say existing with, because it wasn't really living. I would go through all of that again without hesitation to be where I am today, doing what I'm doing today. It's still a great job. I don't regret anything.
You lost your mother to dementia in 2018. Can you tell us a little bit about her and how that experience shaped you?
So, Mom was the best mother I could ever imagine. We were best friends. She was my biggest fan, always there for me, no matter what the situation was. I remember I was waiting to find out if I was getting hired by the police department and I couldn't sleep and she stayed up all night with me and we were talking about it and ended up, I got hired and she was elated. I was, we celebrated. She was with me throughout the majority of my career, always supporting myself and my dad. It was funny because I'd come over to see them. When I got on the motorcycle unit, my very first day, I stopped by my parents' house and my mom got a picture of me with my motorcycle, like I was going away to school for the first day. It was kind of embarrassing. And my dad was laughing at me, but she was all about it. And she loved the police family, just an absolutely incredible person. And when I went to her funeral, I took a Cincinnati police patch off my uniform and put it on her chest so she could be buried with it. Some people might not understand that, but she was as much a part of that organization as we were.
What was the experience like with her diagnosis of dementia and that whole journey? Because so many people listening to this are going through that journey right now themselves. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts to share on that.
So my wife and I kind of looked back through time to see where we first noticed any signs. And we would take my mom on vacation with us. And like the first couple of years, she was fantastic. It was so much fun. And then we went out to California for a motorcycle race and we started to see just little hints. And at the time we didn't really see what it was, but she wandered away from us in a crowd of like 65,000 people. And then she would sometimes wander away in the airport. It just didn't make sense. And her fuse was a little short, which was totally not like her. It got to a point where she was pretty abrasive and it made it so it wasn't enjoyable to go on vacations with her anymore. And we thought maybe it's just normal aging. None of us were looking at dementia being a possibility. And she progressed through the stages rather fast. And it got to the point where she didn't want to have anything to do with us. And there were days when I would stop by and visit and she would get angry because I was there. And then there would be those short periods of time where she seeing me and it was like she was, nothing was wrong with her. Like she was how my mom always was. And then it would change again. Once you know that there's something going on, that she's not trying to be that way, it's easier, but it's still horrible because you're looking at what is your mom, but that's not her inside there. So to me, I would call it mind bending, you know, with the other stressors in life. And then all of a sudden, now you have to navigate this. It was probably one of the cruelest things that I ever went through. Like I said before, she's my best friend. And then one day it's like, it's not her, then it is her, then it's not her. And it's so much to process. And it's frustrating when you have people that aren't aware of what dementia is. And you want to vent to them and you want to say, this is what I'm experiencing, this is what I'm feeling. And they have no idea. They don't mean anything by it, but they'll say, oh, things will get better. Things aren't going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And that's one of those things that led me to where I am today and doing the work I'm doing, because I want to minimize the damage and the fallout from this as much as I can. I would do anything in the world to be able to get rid of this for people so they didn't have to go through it. But I think the best I can do is educate, support, share stories with them, and be there. I mean, other than that, what else can we do?
So you have this personal experience with your mom. You have 30 years in the police force under your belt and you're retired. And then you decide to take on this new role in Amberlea Village. So tell us about what drew you back to policing.
I became involved while I was still with Cincinnati. I became involved with wellness. And in 2020, I was diagnosed with PTSD through a survey that we did at in-service class for the police department. I went to an appointment to be assessed. They came up with a diagnosis of PTSD. I went back to the way I always went after obstacles and I attacked them. And I said, how long is therapy going to be? And they gave me a number like 8 to 12 visits or something like that. And I said, I'll do it in 6. And I ended up doing it in 6. And I pushed through. I've never worked at anything harder in my entire life because I saw a glimpse of getting my life back. So I went after it. I put my head down. I charged through it. And I fought against all those demons that you dig up when you're going through the therapy. And I saw what it did for me. And then I wanted to give that to other people. And I wanted to be that person that would swim against the current and stand up and say it in front of everybody. Start throwing stones at me. I don't care. I'll tell you exactly what it is, what I went through, the things that went through my head, and just the person that I wasn't, the person that I should have been, the person that I needed to be, the person that wasn't present for his wife. Now I am, and we have a better relationship than we've ever had. So I wanted to further this movement along. I mean, a lot of people call it a revolution. It's pretty much what it is. There's a saying, it's really big in the Cincinnati areas. Well, that's the way we've always done it. That's unacceptable to me. It's absolutely unacceptable. So I pushed really hard onto the wellness front And then I contacted my chief, Chief Rich Wallace, at a crash scene where an officer was killed in the line of duty. And I was there for the other first responders. He became aware of the work that I was doing. And he asked me when I was going to retire. And I told him, he offered me a job in the senior resource program. And he said, do what your heart tells you to do. I trust you and build this program how you want it to be. And that's how I ended up here.
So what was the new role? Was it something that already existed that you applied for, or was it something that you created? And what is the work that you were doing?
So it was something totally new. There was no blueprint for it. So my first day on the job in Amberley, it was February of last year. And I sat at my desk and I thought, how am I going to build this ground up thing? I've never done this before. So I thought, well, who are the experts? Well, the Alzheimer's Association is my go-to. I volunteered for them. Volunteering is something I always wanted to do, but I never had time. So I volunteered for the Alzheimer's Association. I watched all their first responder training videos, and I believe it was in one day. And I got a call from them, and the lady named Dana Ritchie said, you really are a police officer? I said, yes. And she said, I've been waiting for somebody like you forever to do this first responder training. So I coordinated with her. We started building this program out. That's just the Alzheimer's angle of it. But then we met a lady named Veronica Sterling from Hospice of Southwest Ohio, who has the Dementia Live program. And we incorporated Dementia Live with Alzheimer's tried and true training and put my angle on it. And we started doing presentations for first responders, training them on everything related to dementia and what they may see when they come in contact with somebody or a caretaker. One of my main priorities was just for safety of caretakers and the safety of first responders so they don't make a terrible mistake, not realizing what's going on in front of them.
So my understanding is this program was designed to help first responders know how to appropriately care for people experiencing dementia, but also mental health illnesses like PTSD and things like that. Is that correct?
Correct. And the other side of this senior program is, the way I say it to people is, I'm kind of like the son or daughter that comes to the house and helps with things. Say you have a light bulb in the hallway that you can't reach. I'll come and help you with that. Or your smoke detectors aren't working. Or you have some issue where maybe your garage door opener's broken. I'll help you do those things so you don't get hurt. I'll go through the house and see if there's any obstructions, like on the way to the bathroom in the dark, suggestions I have for safety, and sometimes just to talk. Nobody likes to be alone. I do not like being alone myself. And I've seen what being isolated does to people, and it doesn't do anything good. So there's several families where I work that I've become like a grandson to them. I have like six different grandmothers now, and I love them all. They're fantastic.
So when I hear the first responder training program, my mind goes immediately to crisis. So for example, an elderly person with dementia has wandered outside of their home and is now standing in an unsafe place on the street. And maybe they're shouting and there's cars coming and they're in their nightgown and we need to come and de-escalate that scenario and help bring them to safety. You know, this is like a crisis response scenario. But what you're describing is something very different. This is, I can't reach this item on the top shelf, or I can't change the light bulb, or I'm lonely and I need someone to talk to. That's different. That's not exactly in that same crisis scenario. So break that down for me. Like, how are you taking this work beyond crisis?
When it started, I wasn't sure really which direction I wanted to go. So I was thinking, like, how can I wrap all these things into one? And I really can't wrap them all into one, but I can blend things. So I blended all these different angles to this. Now, the first responder training specifically is more towards crisis situation, someone that's lost. We teach them how to call out for a person. Don't look intimidating when you're searching in the woods for somebody. They have a kinder, soft voice. Or if you can get somebody with a drone that can record a caretaker's voice so they're familiar with it. One of the examples I use is, say you have a dementia patient that was in Vietnam. Maybe they think they're still in Vietnam. They're in the woods and they hear five or six people marching through the woods. They're not going to come out. They're going to hide. But if we can change our approach, make a much softer approach, we're probably going to be successful, but we definitely won't be successful if we do it the way we've always done it. So yeah, time to change. So that's specifically for first responders. And then dealing with people in their homes with their husband, wife, caretaker, I'll dive into the dementia phase of it as well. What to look for, maybe using AirTags, some kind of tracking device to put in the car, how to secure keys. They're somewhat two separate things, but then they can kind of blend here and there. And it's a lot. I'll tell you, it's a lot. I learned a lot on the way, but my goal is to try and cover as many bases as I possibly can. Then I want this to spread, and I want it to spread nationwide.
So let's say I'm an elderly person living with dementia. Let's say I live with my daughter. It's the two of us in our house and we're very overwhelmed and my daughter's trying to work and take care of me at the same time. How would we find you or interact with you? Do we pick up the phone and call a number? I'm guessing it's not 911. Like, how do we even know that your program exists? And then how do we call you up to get you to come over?
So we push it through our community meetings throughout the year. We have an ice cream social where I have a booth, crime update meetings at all the synagogues where I have my booth and I pass out literature. Our village newsletter goes out. We have segments for the senior resource program. And word of mouth has really spread quite a bit. And then we have a referral system set up for when our officers respond on calls to someone's home. If they see something that looks like someone may need assistance, then they can attach it in their report that they do. And then it goes directly to me where it's assigned to me for follow-up. Sometimes I'll just see somebody engagement in conversation and then they'll say, hey, do you think you could come by my house and look at this for me? Or would you like to come over for a cup of coffee, sit and talk? And I do that too. And then we did two news stories that blew things up too, which was really good.
And is this a separate cohort of officers? I'm assuming that the same officer who is supposed to show up to a crime, for example, is not also on assignment to do this work. It's like two separate forces.
Immediately when they respond, they're doing their police approach to things. I've had people call me in the middle of the night asking me for advice, you know, how do I deal with this situation? So I make myself available 24/7. Even at night, I tell people, I turn my text off, but I keep my phone on so that people can call me if they need me for something. But then if need be, I'll come in to help somebody in a situation. But the officers that are making the radio calls on the street are aware of what's going on and they're sensitive to it. This is a really unique community. The people here absolutely love their police and they treat us fantastic. And the officers are very dedicated and committed to the community. I had lunch with a resident. He's a fantastic guy. And he called it Disneyland. It really is. It's an amazing place. It's not like other places that I've ever worked before. The police officers here know the majority of the residents and they have a relationship with them. It's not just somebody's house that you show up to. And they know they can call me.
So is it just you doing this work or is it a group of officers doing this work? Because I know you carry the title of Senior Citizen Resource Officer, but how many officers are engaged in this work?
It's just me directly.
Got it.
If I need help, all I'd have to do is ask, but planning things, coming up with the program, that's been me. I won't say that I didn't have a lot of help because I asked a lot of people for input and I still do that. We had a dementia training the night before last at the community center. And after it was over, it's an emotional topic, you know, so I'm being there, being supportive, being seen. And I asked several people, I said, what did you think of the presentation? Is there anything we should change? And they gave me their feedback. And let's face it, it's a dark topic. It's nothing happy to talk about. But they were very helpful and giving me suggestions or telling me what they liked, what they didn't like. And I take that kind of information. And a lot of it I can use to shape the program for the future.
So what does a typical day look like for you then? You wake up in the morning and can you bring us through maybe some of the things you might do in a given day?
So what I've started doing since I came off working on the streets in Cincinnati is I have decided that I am priority number one. I have to take care of myself first. I have to be at 100% because if I'm not at 100%, then the people that rely on me are getting cheated because they're not getting my best and they deserve my best. I deserve to be the best that I can possibly be. I spent way too many years abusing myself and running myself into the ground, and I wasn't the best person I could have been. So morning, get up, eat breakfast, do some stretching, maybe some meditation, and then I take a nice drive to work. Sometimes I'll take the long way, relax and think. I get to work, check my computer, and then usually I'll have appointments set up for people that I need to visit. The visits go so well that I pretty much have to block off a two-hour block for each visit I do. Then I'll go to check my emails, find out what presentations are looking like they're going to develop in the future. Those range from anything dementia-related, dementia training for first responders, to PTSD talks. One of my favorite talks I do is with Dr. Erica Berkley, and it's called Cop Doc Talk. And I describe the PTSD experience, and she describes the clinical side of it. So when we present, people get both sides so they can understand what's exactly going on. I stay very busy. I do make some phone calls, but I don't like to do that very much. I'd much rather talk to people in person because I think a lot can be lost in a phone call. I have my people that I visit, some more than once a week. I have to say it's really like family. One lady I did one of the news stories with WCPO in Cincinnati, I got an email from a student that she taught. The student is now in England, and she wanted to talk to this lady. So coordinated with that and get them reunited. It's just little things like that. It's no longer being on the street chasing bad guys, which I had enough of that. And at the end of my career, I looked back and I thought, you know, what did I really accomplish over all these years? And I thought this event, that event, but you didn't have anything you could hang your hat on. There was something missing. Now I have relationships with people I never would have thought possible. Like I said, I have like six different grandmothers. We've shared our worst memories, our best memories. We've laughed, we've cried. These are people that hug me when I leave, call me when they're lonely. I don't think there's anything else in the world that's like this right now. I've looked around, I don't see any other program like this. It's amazing.
Can you bring us into one of those two-hour visits? You get in your car, do you drive your police car or do you drive a regular car and you show up and what happens in those 2 hours?
It depends on what cars are available. Sometimes it's a police car. Sometimes it's an undercover car. I roll into the driveway and I usually like to park in the back so nobody looks and sees if there is a police car. I don't want people to see, oh, what's going on there, you know, and privacy is my main concern and confidentiality. That's huge. So I'll just make it a friendly visit, knock on the door. And one particular lady, she always has tea for me. And we sit down at the table and drink tea, or she'll make me a coffee. And she always has some kind of cookies or some kind of treat or something. And we'll just sit down and talk, see what's going on, what's broken, what needs to be fixed, suggestions for things. And we'll just talk about life. And this particular lady, she knows my wife. She loves my wife. They're friends. And they're going to end up getting together and spending a day cooking. We've had people make dinner for us and invite us over for dinner. The typical day is just go in and it's like visiting grandma, visiting your parents, checking in, see what's going on, talking about current events and how they feel.
You mentioned loneliness as something that people with dementia often live with. Do you find that the people you're visiting have family around, or are a lot of them alone?
A lot of them don't. A lot of their kids have moved away and some of them live in other countries. So they do feel isolated and they've expressed, I miss my kids. I miss my son. I miss my daughter. I miss my grandkids. And say they're in Germany now. They really don't have anybody. That's kind of emotional to address with people. You can feel their loneliness and call it what it is. It's pain. It hurts. It hurts your heart. I'm never going to be able to replace that, but I can maybe offset it a little bit, take the edge off and be there.
What have you noticed are the most helpful, low-hanging fruit of ways that you can help people living with dementia?
Being able to put things right in front of them so they're visible. Say they look for spices, salt, pepper, where their produce is. Say if it's on the very bottom of a refrigerator, bring it up to the top so it's directly in their line of sight. And the same thing with other things in the kitchen, the things they regularly need, let's put them down on the kitchen counter so they don't have to get on a step stool because the risks are tremendous. Just make life easier. And then sometimes we'll discuss driving, and that's the touchy one. Maybe it's time to hang up the keys, and some people realize it and it scares them because they've almost had a crash or something. Those are tough discussions.
You mentioned that there's nothing like this really anywhere else. And you also said that you want to see this scaled nationally.
Yes.
So I'm wondering what you think about police departments. I know that there's some conversations about them already being overstretched and having to deal with traditional policing needs. How do you see work like this integrating into police work in an ideal world, but then also just factoring in the practical world with limited resources and things like that?
So first, I will go with putting out the dementia training for first responders is to get everybody some education as to what it is, to get them comfortable with it, and for the people that are responding to the calls night and day, so they have a better understanding and they can be that compassionate person, the person that has empathy. They can feel this person's hardships. And I think anybody with a heart that can see that and feel it will then be motivated to do whatever they can for that person. Going on calls like that where you can actually help somebody, that changes your whole outlook on things. That can be very refreshing. Maybe after you just left a shooting, you switch gears and you realize, okay, the world is not all about this horrible violence that we witness and experience. There's a different side to this. I think it's healthy for you to be able to help people and be in an environment where you can really do good and see the good that you do happen right in front of you. As far as police departments being stretched thin, they absolutely are. That's why I think the education that we just spoke about is so important. But if you have an agency that can possibly come up with something like this, it starts with leadership. Leadership has to buy in, and they have to be leaders, and they have to realize what's important. Your seniors are incredibly important. There's a lot of wisdom that can come from them. Those are members of your community, and they deserve the service. My chief is fantastic. He's all on board with it. Any resources that I ask for, I get. And it's because it's for the greater good and taking care of our seniors. I think what it takes aside from strong leadership is you have to find somebody that is motivated to do this best if they have some kind of experience with dementia. With the rate this is progressing, it's going to be pretty much every one of us is going to at least know somebody or have somebody in their family. Another reason why I think it's so important, because this is going to affect all of us. What is it like by 2050, they're saying that the amount of people with dementia is going to double. I don't think we're possibly going to be able to get ahead of it. But if we sit on our hands, it's not going to do anybody any good. So push forward, create a program and go with it. Anybody that would want to know about how to start it, how to plan it, how to build it, can get a hold of me and I will be a resource for anybody that would like it.
You said that one of the first things that you would try to scale nationally is getting all police officers trained in the dementia first responding program. As somebody who over the course of your life, over decades, has probably de-escalated a number of situations, I'm wondering if there's two or three common things you've seen and if you have any advice for families who are trying to do that de-escalation in their own home, like something about the de-escalation techniques.
I would say, and it might sound silly to some people, but breathing, if something's getting that intense, if it's possible, if it's safe to step away and do a breathing exercise. I do 4-7-8 breathing. When you go to a situation in somebody's house, and what I've picked up on over the years, and this is true with any kind of traumatic situation, is when you sit people down on a couch and get them in a relaxing spot away from other people so they're not constantly exposed to the chaos, is if you watch their shoulders and their chest, they're breathing from their chest and their shallow breaths, and their shoulders are up to their elbows. And once you get them to relax and start actually breathing, belly breathing, it's like they melt in front of you. You can see their shoulders drop. So now they're at the point where they can listen and they're not going off nothing but emotion. They're going off of facts. It's what's going on. What have I just experienced? What am I dealing with currently? I can't get my husband to take a shower. He won't put his clothes on. He won't eat his dinner. And they're frazzled. They don't have anything left to give. So remove them from the situation. Get them in a nice, calm place, and you're going to do a whole lot better that way than you would by screaming at somebody, yelling, calm down. That has never worked in a million years. It will never work. That's not how you do it. Those tactics that you will learn from the dementia training, so you have all the tools that you need to go through one of these situations and have it end up as good as it can. We don't need to go in there and throw water on a grease fire. That's not going to work. But just like anything else, knowledge is key. And we really can't expect people to know this. Up until we started this program, I didn't know anything about dementia other than what I experienced with my mom. In 30 years of law enforcement, I never had dementia training. For the longest time, we didn't even know what it was. They would tell us it was just old age. You could clearly see it was more than that, but nobody knew what it was. And I'm not faulting anybody because literally there are still way too many people that have no idea what dementia is.
Yeah.
It's the importance of spreading the awareness and giving people accurate information so they know what it is, what it does, and everything about it. And then making them aware of the resources that are available.
This isn't kind of a random question, but one thing we have seen is that dementia is often diagnosed way too late. Like you said, some people don't even know the difference between dementia and normal aging, and often the disease gets pretty far along until the diagnosis is made, and it's not until there's been a huge financial mistake or a fall or some other crisis that brings the diagnosis out into the light. Do you see a role for police potentially helping with diagnosis? Like if you are called to somebody's home and you look around and you have this feeling that this person has dementia, do you just encourage them to talk to their doctor? Or how would you bring that person to the attention of a physician so that they can get the care that they need?
What I've actually had happen before is you'll see something and then you start watching and then all of a sudden you'll start seeing multiple signs. If you can get in touch with a family member, if they have somebody close, get a hold of them and just say, hey, I'm concerned. Would you want to check this out? Let me have your opinion. And if this is something that you think is there, you know, share our opinions, thoughts, talk about it later, what their visit was like, and then go from there. I would much rather a family member take those steps. But yeah, it's better to address it than have something horrible happen. It's here. It's part of all of our lives now. So you have to face it. We can't run from it. So let's do what we can to act as quickly and catch it as early as we can to get people prepared for it.
You said something earlier about after a while, the job just started to feel like chasing down bad guys and how this element of the work has a different flavor and how this work may not only protect and serve communities, but might have something to offer the mental health of the police officers themselves who sacrifice so much and see so much and often end up with PTSD and things like that. Just wondering if you could speak a bit about the benefits of this program to the police officers.
I think it teaches you something about yourself. When you go through the dementia live training, you start to see what people are experiencing. And it just made me have so much empathy for people, which was something that really was lacking during the years that I was dealing with PTSD. I mean, I was emotionally dead. I couldn't feel any kind of good emotion at all. I was basically a machine. That's a horrible way to live. There aren't words to describe what that's like. You're just hollow. There's nothing there. And when we get to that stage, you're reaching for anything that you can possibly reach for to make you feel alive. For me, that was risk-taking by racing motorcycles. I had a mentality where if I would go to a race, I would either win or crash. And more than one time, I woke up in an infield care center and I'd been knocked unconscious, broke ribs. I've had 10 surgeries, you know, to repair my body from those risk-taking days, many concussions. That'll put you down a really dark path. But when you go to a dementia training program, you get to see the way the brain works and you start to see the effects of dementia on the brain and how it can generate that same fight or flight that you get from PTSD. And that's one of the things that I was thinking about this at the presentation the other night. I started to see the similarities between dementia and PTSD. And that was really something that caught my attention. And I was looking at how it affects the different parts of the brain, just like PTSD does. And I can identify with it. I guess I'm kind of dialed into it more with my community now because I live that life where that's how my brain was operating. So it kind of wired me for being able to have this ability to talk to people that are dealing with dementia and knowing about how the vision is affected, bringing myself in front of these people in their line of sight. It makes you human again when you experience these things with people. You know, it makes you realize that there's a whole lot more to this job than just running around with your hair on fire. You do have opportunities to make a difference that you can see and experience, like in real time, right in front of you. And it fills you up.
Tell me about your efforts to scale this. You talked about leadership and how it has to start with leadership. Are there any hints that other cities or other parts of the country might be interested in taking on a project like this? And what's the state of things and where are we going?
So partnering with different groups, like how I sought out the help from the Alzheimer's Association, with Hospice of Southwest Ohio, with community groups, you can bring them all together and we just all start talking and networking with people and make this what it is. It's a community issue. It's not just a police issue. It's not just a fire department issue. It's a community issue. And when you can bring these people together and they get to see that, wow, the police are involved in this. The fire department's involved in this. Everybody's working for a common goal, which, let's just be realistic about it. In today's world, how many people do you know that work towards a common goal together? I didn't see that for a very long time. The first time I saw it was when we were having these meetings to plan how this training for first responders was supposed to come together. I'm sitting in a corporate building, which I had never been in. I'm sitting with two of the most incredible women I've ever met in my entire life, and we're planning this thing. It's three people with the same goal. Nobody's looking to take any credit for anything. All the people in that room want is success. And I'm really open with my emotions. I don't hide anything. I don't have any secrets as far as any of that goes. And I got tears in my eyes and they're kind of looking at me. And I said, I just got to tell you, this is incredible. This is really incredible for me to witness. I said, I've never seen this in all my years of being a police officer. I never saw people planning a program like this and working for a common goal and nobody's trying to grab the glory for themselves. It's not about you. It's about everyone else. And that to me was mind-blowing. I'd never seen anything develop like that right in front of me. And it was amazing. And that right from that point, I knew this was going to be successful because I saw the attitudes of the people involved. And all three of us are selfless people. And I consider myself to be selflessly selfish. I'll do anything in the world to help anybody, but I have to maintain my level of being at 100%. So that's the selfish part. I prioritize myself, but I don't do it for my own good, so to speak. I do it so I can be the best that I can be for myself and for everyone else.
Well, this work is really inspiring and really innovative. And as we draw this to an end, I was wondering if there was anything else you wanted to leave our listeners with. Again, these are people living with dementia or taking care of a loved one with dementia. Any takeaways about policing dementia, senior care, or anything else?
What I really want to see, there's so many different things, like I've said earlier in this, but I want the stigma to be destroyed ultimately with mental health issues and dementia. With that, if a police officer, firefighter, any first responder shows up to your house, or if you're involved in a crash, let them know immediately that my loved one has dementia. He's cognitively impaired. You know, if you can do it subtle, do it subtle. Or if you're at a restaurant, say somebody in the restaurant gets upset because your person has done something that offends them, tell these people immediately so they have some understanding. But yeah, especially with first responders, you come into a situation and it could look like a domestic violence situation. Let the officers and firefighters know that this is a dementia patient because it's totally going to change the response. You're still going to be cautious and looking out for everybody's safety, but it does change how you're going to deal with the situation. If you have a loved one that wanders, make sure when you call the police, call 911, make sure you give them a very good description of what they have. Let them know if they do have an Apple AirTag on their keys in their car, or you put one in their shoe, a very good and accurate description of what they're wearing, where they used to live, where they used to work. Give them as much information as you possibly can. And if you're comfortable with it, let them know that dementia is the thing, that it's an issue. So they have all the information they can possibly have. And that's the thing with me, like, I don't fear stigma about any of this. That's why I'm sitting here talking to you. This is life. This is what happens. And there's no need for a stigma about any of this stuff. We all experience it. So let's talk about it. Make it up front. Get involved. Push this further. The more people we get involved, the more accepted it's going to be. Spread the word. Do whatever you can. I have big plans for it, and I'm extremely positive about it, and I want to see it go nationwide. I'd love to see it go worldwide, but we're starting small. I'm one of those people that I'll look at things and think, well, I'm not doing enough. I haven't progressed enough, and I have to check myself on that. And I say, you know, this has only been out since May of 2024, and it's already where it is now. I'm proud of this, and I don't have any problem saying it because I know the amount of work that went into it. And as I said before, not just my work. There's a lot of people that have helped and made this what it is today. And it shows the power of teamwork. You get people that are passionate and truly care what can be accomplished. And it is absolutely, like, I literally have cold chills right now talking about it.
Well, I think that's a wonderful note to end on. Thank you so much, Chris, for speaking with us today at REMO. I have been speaking with Chris Perry, 30-year law enforcement veteran, senior citizen resource officer with the Amberlea Village Police Department, advocate, caregiver, son, husband, and protector of the community. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for the opportunity. It means a lot to me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. For more information about this episode, check out the links and resources listed in the show notes. If you're interested in learning more from REMO, visit us at www.remo.health. Take care.